And presently his flatterers cried out, one from one place and another from another, though not for his good, that he was a god. And they added, be thou merciful to us, for although we have hitherto reverenced thee only as a man, yet shall we henceforth own thee as superior to mortal nature. Upon this the king did neither rebuke them nor reject their impious flattery. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 81, The Hakhel of Agrippa. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. This past October, the papers reported on the revival of an ancient ritual that once took place in the temple in Jerusalem. The Jerusalem Post tells us, quote, every 7 years, in ancient times, Jewish men, women, and children would gather at the temple on the first day of Sukkot to hear the king of Jerusalem read aloud from the Torah. In 2002, the paper continued, there's no king and no temple, and more than half of all Jews live far from Jerusalem. But the ritual is still inspiring Jews around the world to gather together. In fact, the tradition, known as Hakhel, appears to be seeing a resurgence of popular interest. End quote. We're further informed that, quote, the founding of Israel in 1948 invigorated the practice of multiple laws specific to the land of the ancient Jews, including the commandment to leave fields fallow every 7 years, and renewed attention to Hakhel. In 1952, the conclusion of the first Shemitah year after Israel's founding, parallel events were held in Jerusalem and New York City. In Jerusalem, the article continued, there will be a Hakhel event at the Western Wall Plaza on the second day of Sukkot, where three new Torah scrolls will be dedicated. Expected to attend are Isaac Herzog, the current president of Israel, whose grandfather, then the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, was present at the country's first Hakhel ceremony, as well as many prominent rabbis, cantors, and singers. End quote. All this, ladies and gentlemen, in recollection of Deuteronomy's declaration commanding Israel, Hakel et ha'am, gather the people together, men and women and children, and thy stranger that is within thy gates, that they may hear and that they may learn and fear the Lord your God and observe to do all the words of this law. As was mentioned, this ritual was understood to be performed every 7 years, with the king reading from the Torah inside the temple complex. And we can perhaps pinpoint the last king to engage in this ritual in the temple, or at least the last recorded to have done so. Agrippa the First. And the rabbinic description of that event tells us a great deal of how to approach the sacred city of Jerusalem, not only with the hindsight of history, but also today. As we have discussed, upon being named the king of United Judea by the Emperor Claudius, Agrippa functioned as a Roman-style ruler in Caesarea, but as a Jew in Jerusalem. And considering the alternative that the Jews had already experienced, whether Roman procurator or Herod himself, Agrippa was considered by at least most of the city's denizens to be an enormous improvement. Rabbinic literature is replete with references to Agrippa's reverence for the temple. We are told that the king would bring his own first fruits to the temple by himself, as if he were a simple Judean farmer, and that he sought to ensure that poor worshippers in the temple were accorded their own dignity. Here is one such description from the Midrash, a text that I am giving my own translation. The story appears in the midst of a rabbinic elaboration on one of the most humble of altar offerings, the giving of birds rather than animals, a sacrifice seen as set up by God in order to allow the poor an opportunity to join the wealthy in bringing of their own property to the temple. Quote, Agrippa the king requested one day to offer 1,000 burnt offerings. He sent and said to the high priest, do not allow anyone else to bring offerings today other than myself. A poor man came, and in his hands were two doves, and he said to the priest, offer these. The priest responded, the king commanded me and said to me, let no one other than myself bring offerings today. Said the poor man, my lord the high priest, I capture four doves every day, and I offer two and support myself from two. If you do not offer these two, you are cutting off my livelihood. The priest took them and offered them, and a message appeared to Agrippa in a dream, saying, the offering of a poor man preceded yours. He sent and said to the high priest, did I not command you? Let no one bring offerings today aside from me. He responded, my lord the king, one poor man came and in his hand was two doves, and he asked me to offer them. I responded, the king commanded me and said to me, let no one other than myself bring offerings today. And the poor man said, my lord the high priest, I capture four doves every day, and I offer two and support myself from two. If you do not offer these two, you are cutting off my livelihood. The king responded, it is well what you did. End quote. This, in turn, brings us to the Hakel held by Agrippa, wherein, according to the Mishnah, the king stood amidst the crowd assembled on the Temple Mount, reading from Deuteronomy, when he suddenly alighted upon one verse commanding Israel not to appoint a foreign king from outside its brethren. At this point, we are informed, Agrippa's eyes welled with tears, for he saw this verse as an implicit criticism of his own heritage, for through his patrilineal line, he was Idumean, Herodian. At this point, the Mishnah reports, the sages all replied, "Do not be afraid, Agrippa. You are our brother. You are our brother." The story reflects the affection for Agrippa among Jerusalem's leading Jews, and yet the Talmud, in a striking gloss on this Mishnah, also comments that this flattery showered upon the king set the stage for the destruction of Jerusalem yet to come. And perhaps the point of the Talmud is that in the end, for all his reverence for Jerusalem, Agrippa had been forced upon the Jews of the city by Rome. And, as we have seen, Agrippa functioned as a Roman ruler outside the city. And, perhaps above all, as with the Hasmonean dynasty, the Herodians were not Davidic descendants. And Jerusalem is David's city, set apart for the Davidic dynasty. Thus, as we consider this story of Agrippa's Hakel, one is reminded of an event that we will discuss later in Jerusalem 365, when we get to the 20th century. It was on Shabbat in the summer of 1920 that the recently appointed High Commissioner of British Mandate Palestine, Herbert Samuel, entered the Churva Synagogue in the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem's Old City and was invited to read the Haftorah. He read the prescribed prophetic passage for the Shabbat following the fast of the 9th of Av, when the destruction of Jerusalem is mourned. He read, in other words, the words of Isaiah, comfort ye, my people." On the heels of the Balfour Declaration, it seemed for many a glorious moment, and yet the drama of the day was not done. One of the rabbinic leaders in the sanctuary was Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and after Samuel finished the Haftorah, the High Commissioner recited the traditional blessings, including the penultimate prayer, which spoke of David, declaring David's dynasty the rightful rulers of Jerusalem. The blessing contained the words, "Let no stranger sit upon his throne, nor let others continue to usurp his glory. For you swore by your holy name that through all eternity his lamp will never go dark." And as the British High Commissioner read these words, suddenly, it is said, Rabbi Cook started and repeated them in Hebrew, "Al kiso lo yeshev zar," "Let no one else aside from a member of David's dynasty sit upon David's throne." We cannot be certain what Rabbi Cook intended to communicate. He certainly was delighted with much that had been achieved by the Zionist movement. But perhaps, nevertheless, Rabbi Cook meant to remind all those assembled at the moment that Herbert Samuel, though a Jew, was not the Messiah, and that despite the miracles that had already occurred, disappointment was still a possibility. The Talmud's point, similarly, perhaps, is that to engage in excessive flattery of a Herodian king within the temple was to commit the original sin of the Hasmoneans, meaning such flattery was effectively denying that the throne of Jerusalem must go to the house of David. And, in this instance, considering how Agrippa had risen to the throne, this flattery also was taken by the Talmud as an implication that the kingship of Jerusalem was truly within the gift of Claudius the emperor, rather than its rightful source, the Jews of Jerusalem. In general, the meaning of the Hakel ceremony, of having the king read from the Torah, is, to paraphrase Rabbi Moshe Lichtenstein, that the role of the Jewish king is to serve as a national teacher who takes it upon himself to teach Torah to the subjects of his kingdom. And to this I would add, to the subjects in his kingdom, not just in Jerusalem, but everywhere. And it is with this in mind that we can study Josephus, who tells us about Agrippa's untimely death, which occurred soon after when he was acting like a Roman ruler outside Jerusalem. Josephus writes, quote, "Now when Agrippa had reigned 3 years over all Judea, he came to the city Caesarea, which was formerly called Strato's Tower, and there he exhibited shows in honor of Caesar, upon his being informed that there was a certain festival celebrated to make vows for his safety, at which festival a great multitude was gotten together of the principal persons, and such as were of dignity through his province. On the second day of which shows, he put on a garment made wholly of silver, and of a contexture truly wonderful, and came into the theater early in the morning, at which time the silver of his garment being illuminated by the fresh reflection of the sun's rays upon it, shone out after a surprising manner, and was so resplendent as to spread a horror over those that looked intently upon him. And presently his flatterers cried out, one from one place and another from another, though not for his good, that he was a god. And they added, 'Be thou merciful to us, For although we have hitherto reverenced thee only as a man, yet shall we henceforth own thee as superior to mortal nature." Upon this the king did neither rebuke them nor reject their impious flattery. End quote. In other words, Agrippa was revered as a Roman ruler, as someone semi-divine or godlike, and he said nothing. At this point, Josephus tells us, Agrippa saw an owl sitting over his head and took that to be an ill omen. Josephus continues, quote, "A severe pain also arose in his belly and began in a most violent manner. He therefore looked upon his friends and said, 'I, whom you call a god, am commanded presently to depart this life, while Providence thus reproves the lying words you just now said to me. And I, who was by you called immortal, am immediately to be hurried away by death. But I am bound to accept of what Providence allots as it pleases God. For we have by no means lived ill, but in a splendid and happy manner.' When he said this, his pain was become violent. Accordingly, he was carried into the palace, and the rumor went abroad everywhere that he would certainly die in a little time. But the multitude presently sat in sackcloth with their wives and children after the law of their country, and besought God for the king's recovery. All places were also full of mourning and lamentation." End quote. Thus did Agrippa pass away, a man who, at least according to Josephus, illustrated humility in Jerusalem, but who originally allowed for Roman-style acclamation of Jerusalem's ruler outside of the city. As historians note, with the death of Agrippa I, also died the last chance to keep Jerusalem and Judea under united leadership. It is likely that had Agrippa lived, the revolt would not have broken out. And the story of Agrippa and his hakel is instructive to us today. It is truly wondrous that Jews have returned to Jerusalem, rebuilt Jerusalem, and even hold hakel ceremonies in Jerusalem. This should be a source of celebration, of gratitude, of awe. Yet, we also not only celebrate what is, but ponder what is yet to be. We know that the house of David is not restored, and we know that Jews are not even allowed at this very moment to read from the Torah atop the Temple Mount. Thus, as we turn to the very last years of Second Temple Jerusalem, we think as well of Jerusalem today, and in gratitude, yearning, and hope, are inspired to ensure that the dream of David still lives in our hearts. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, signing off.